Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life.
I'm here with Rue Madge.
Hey, man.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Mate, we are honoured. Honoured to have a legend. We're in the presence of a legend, right? Yeah. I know that word gets bandied about, but in this instance, fucking true, bruv. Charlie Tuna. Wow. Oh my God! Oh. Oh my God!
I appreciate that, man. That's
Dude,
crazy.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. First of all, the legend thing, that jacket is kind of tight. I'm a little weird sometimes.
Listen,
about that.
I know that you're weird about that, but you. I know you wouldn't say it because you're a humble guy, but I'm telling you, that's how you're regarded in this tiny booth in Bermondsey. Like, that's how it is.
Welcome to Terra Dome. I'm your host, the friendly neighborhood baritone. Vocals channel the spirits of old poets. I don't drink, my glass never will hold a wet. Similar to Paul or his Dunbar. From the crew you thought was just all chorus and one star. Now, I'm 1/6 of a clique that brunched. While commercial counterparts are in constant conflict,
We've also got Sam Gill in the place. Hello, Sam.
Hey, how you doing?
What is your official title, Sam?
I'm a diplomat of sound, booking agent.
There you go, booking agent. So he's responsible. If you are thinking, oh, I'm so glad that they're bringing over so many great artists, that's because of Sam. Basically,
oh, yes,
single-handedly, right?
I wouldn't say single-handedly.
There's an organisation, but you're the main, do you know what I mean?
I do what I can.
Charlie's here because of you, right?
Partly,
mainly
and because of his great team as well.
Yeah, but mainly because of you. Don't be humble.
Don't be humble. But yeah, I've done it.
It wouldn't have happened without
you. It's
all
on me.
Yeah. Don't. Do you know what I mean? That's, you were giving it all that chat outside. Now suddenly we started recording. You're saying it's a team.
Like, oh shit! I'm gonna get caught out online.
So Charlie, listen. Thank you so much for
coming,
man. Like, it's so good to have you. Massive fan. You're over here with Crafty Cuts, right?
Yes, sir.
Doing a tour. How did that come about with you two sort of?
It's crazy. Heard about Crafty Cuts from a couple of old school songs, but never really put it together about how massive he was.
Yeah.
We met through a mutual friend, Nick Middleton from the Funk Hunters.
Yeah.
But I guess he was trying to get at me through my management, or I think that's what he told me. He told me, he said he gave a beat to Newmark to give to me, and New never gave it to me. I don't know, for some reason. New is always busy and running around and shit, so it's the same thing. So
yeah,
I missed that from New. Then he got with my management and gave it to Mike Lanz, is my manager, right? So he played me the beat, and I was like, damn, this sounds like some Jurassic stuff. But I didn't really think twice about it, other than him saying, okay, I see that you're going to be in Europe with in the UK with the Funk Hunters. So if you're over, man, maybe we can record some stuff. I was like, all right, but I took it with a grain of salt, kind of. We ended up having a couple of off days, and so we scheduled going to Crafty Studio. Took a train over there, got there, treated us mad gracious. He played like 3 or 4 different dope ass beats, and I was like, man, that one dope. And we sat there and just vibed out for like an hour and created this song called Hands High.
Felt presence when I bring this bizarre style. Well pleasured as a king when my bars dry. Still presence like the wings of a barn owl. On top of the yard power entertaining large crowds. At last the purple hermit monster's massive. You're done if your response is passive. Back by the miraculous Jurassic in classic fashion. But when solo I'm a verbal assassin. And I'm asking you, yeah, ain't no time to stand by. Get ready to dance and blow your hands high.
It came about so organically that I was just like, man, it's rare that you find somebody that you can, you know, instantly click and work that fast with. You know what I mean? So I thought that was fun. Once again, song was dope, but I didn't really think as much about it as obviously Crafty does. That dude thinks. Like, he's ahead of time, like crazy. So he had hit me like a month or two later with a song that he was doing with MC Dynamite, because they got an album coming out, and Dynamite is one of my favorite MCs from from time, mate.
Right?
I mean, for real though, like old school, like Ronnie Size days. That dude, I love that dude. So he sent me the track, and I'm like, word, I get a chance to do a song with Dynamite. I'm down, let's do it.
It's so mad to me that you're a Dynamite fan. Like, oh, not the, no, I mean, Dynamite's amazing, don't get me wrong. But the fact that you're, it's just amazing.
Fan. Yeah. Like, I love going places and hearing dudes that you know, are based on what I do as well, you know. Hip hop heads or what have you, but like make it theirs, like do it. I remember coming to the UK for the first time and hearing these mixtapes with like Rodney P and Roots Maneuver on it, and I kept asking, "Hey, who is that dude right there, though?" No, but who is that dude? I kept asking that. Then I seen this video for Juggle Things Proper.
Yeah.
Who is that dude, man? Right? Then I don't know. 4 or 5 years later, I get a call just out of the blue from Ninja Tune. And he's like, is this Charlie Tune? I'm like, yeah. He's like, hold on 1 second, and put Roots on the phone. He's like, yo, I want to do a song with you. I was like, ha, finally, because I like your shit. You know,
so that has got to be the deepest voice phone conversation of all time.
Yeah,
like,
that was crazy. It's crazy. I got a video that I've been thinking about in this day and age now, because I think only MySpace was around when we did that tune. But of me and him creating Join the Dots, it was like such an organic thing. And to, like you said, I was listening back to it. I was like, listen to that conversation. That's a hell of a baritone conversation right there. It was crazy. But we got in the booth because he was like, how you want to approach the song? And I was like, I don't know. Tell you the truth, I don't even know what we want to do. He was like, let's just go freestyle and just maybe we'll find some ways.
Yeah.
He was like, all right, cool. So the video, I just set up the camera. The video is just me and him freestyling for like a good 30 minutes.
Yeah.
He got all that on tape. And then this was my first time actually like seeing what Pro Tools does.
Yeah.
And we was just playing it back and he was like, okay, I like this, I like this, I like this. I was like, you can do that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I like that, I like that, I like that. And we just basically Soul Train Scramble Board that song together.
Yeah.
I mean, from the freestyle. So that's what's cool about the Join the Dots too. And it's really a big freestyle.
Holy
it's
shit,
stuff like
man.
That.
Yeah. That's wicked.
To change because of fantasies, they try to feed us. Under the bridge, drumming for Flea and Anthony Kiedis. I ran from elitists who got the truth confused. It's the man, Vivian, and the one who's my dude. Yeah. Mystic mindset, travel at warp 8. Flashback to my very first taste, the hash cake. Oh, Lord, I feel so sensual. And every now and then, I get a great sense of woe.
So you're in LA now, right? You're from
I'm from Chicago. Been in LA for a long time. I went to high school there. So.
I got like when Lyricist Lounge came out, man. Like I've got no idea what the response was in the States, but I know that over here, when that album dropped, like it was just like it was just incredible. It was just amazing the response that album got.
Yeah.
And you, Jurassic 5 had like arguably the tune of the album with JU, right?
Wow.
When that tune drops on that. It's the first time I'd heard Jurassic 5, like, and I just went, holy shit, what is this?
I shoot the gift, I'm planning the bow swift. Vocals are coming thicker than Anna Nicole Smith. Malignant metaphors and gun to state nerves. We conjugate verbs and constipate nerves like you. I'm here to end a conspiracy, Philly sleep. So you can really see the ellipses at hand. I'm tuna fish on the stick ship. The eclectic, hectic, desperate, eccentric.
You must have felt the response of being the album. Did you feel it? Did you know how well it had gone down?
Not exactly. Just as separate as the two coasts are within hip hop.
Yeah.
In America, you know, West Coast,
yeah,
East Coast.
Yeah.
It was like the East Coast had an underground scene going on as well as the West Coast at the same time. We were only dealing with what we had in front of us, which was like a lot of the labels didn't want to sign anything other than gangster rap. You know, once NWA came out, they basically made the imprint for every other label to be like, I want an NWA too, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it became a climate in LA, especially where you couldn't really get a deal or get like a A&R person to even listen to your stuff because they were looking for a certain style of rap, and that's just that. So a lot of us congregated at open mic spots, and I know it was two really big ones, and we were part of one of them. One was in Pasadena, but the other one was in South Central LA, and that's called The Good Life. And it was a health food store in like a little strip mall.
Yeah.
Could fit like 75 people in that place, but like 400 people in the parking lot. And it got that big.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? $3 to get in. It's from 7 to 10 on Thursday nights. And it started in 89 and ended, I think, in like 94. 5, I think, and switched over to Leimert Park, which was not that far from
the
same spot. But anyway, we would congregate at these places, man, and, you know, just do open mic shows, and eventually it became this cool-ass community that was almost like a college, man. It was teaching us how to be performers, you know what I mean? We had rules like you couldn't curse, which sounds like whatever. But, man, that limitation made us get extremely creative.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I really saw a lot of, especially with us, too, like a lot of boundaries being pushed because we had these walls that we couldn't go past.
What made you come up with, like, no curses? Was it for a creative reason or just because?
Well, at the Good Life, okay, so once again, South Central Los Angeles, this is the middle of the ghetto.
Yeah.
Exposition in Crenshaw, right?
Right.
Middle of the ghetto, right?
Yeah.
The health food store was owned by, you know, three Afrocentric people, you know what I'm saying? One is B. Hall, who is the face and the voice of the place. There's another chick, her name was Latifah, and her husband. And they were, like, from the 60s, like, freedom fighters and, you know, the
right.
whole thing.
Yeah.
Right? So they were all about, especially in the climate of gangster rap, trying to help the inner city black and Latino youth to stray away from the gang life and all of that stuff. And anything that was involved in that. So, you know what I'm saying? Oh, we're going to throw an open mic. You can't curse.
Yeah.
Out the gate. Don't bring that gang shit in my spot. That was their whole thing. But the crazy part was it even made an avenue for the gangster dudes to have to come in there and get creative.
Right, yeah.
Hence, you got to do like Snoop Dogg. Snoop used to come. When I first saw Snoop, I was like, oh, here come another one of these gangster dudes. And and after that first song, he was with a group called Perfection. After that first song, we was like, oh, but Skinny Homie is hard. You know what I'm saying? For real. Like, he was dope.
With NWA, it's an interesting thing you say that, because obviously we're not part of the culture over here. We're observing it from outside. But, like, with NWA, it's such, like, straight out of Compton and everything that NWA did was so amazing, but their legacy was, like, not through any fault of their own, but it was almost, it had such a negative effect on everything that's coming out after that, didn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, and, like, almost arguably to the point where in the UK, when people think about hip-hop, even to this day, they think of it as that snapshot of that kind of crime-riddled kind of, you know, that kind of thing. It's such a mad one, because I love NWA, and I listen to all of it, it's great. But then, like you said, all of that copycat stuff came out afterwards, and every record label jumped on it and said, this is what we want, this is what we want. And then hip-hop got blamed for that.
Yeah.
But hip-hop artists were not selecting what got blown up. The record labels are doing that, right?
Exactly.
They're going, we want this, we want this, we want this, and that gets what pushed. And I remember talking to mates about it, and I said, I'll be honest with you, right? If I was in a situation where I was making no money and I was struggling, I was trying to feed my kids, and they said to me, you've got to say this, this, and this in order to get a record deal, I probably would do it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, right.
My integrity is not more important than my children eating.
Right.
Do you know what
exactly.
I mean? Like,
exactly.
So it's like it's a mad one.
Way,
yeah.
It was an instance in that Jay-Z movie, I forgot the name of it, Fade to Black, I think it was?
Yeah.
Where he had them two dudes in the studio and they was like gangster rap. He's like, man, why y'all do this, man? He's like, well, you know, this is what we think we needed to do to get signed. And Jay-Z turned to the camera and was like, you see this, America? You see what? But I thought that was just extremely ironic that Jay-Z was telling us this. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, but yeah, it's real. It's like, you know, you have to, you know, weigh the options. Are you doing this for the love? Because a lot of dudes I know, you know, 9 to 5s. I had a 9 to 5 the whole time when we was doing this shit until we got a record deal.
Yeah.
Or actually, we got a record, but until I told my dude, because I was a security guard at the time, and my dude who I went to high school with was my boss, which was dope. Leeway, so dope. I told him, I said, yo, the minute, because at the time I was doing shows with Jurassic and I was doing shows with Ozo Motley at the same time, and it was like we were doing all this stuff around the city. And I was getting all this extra change from doing all these shows. I was like, hey, man, the minute these shows start paying me more than the security job, I'm out, man. I ain't trying to leave you hangers. I'm just telling you now.
Yeah.
And maybe about a week after that, I got a call in the middle of one of the jobs. I was out at a carnival, securing this carnival, and I got a call from Ozo Motley. They was like, hey, we got a show, and I forgot what it was, but it paid X amount of money. I was like, I'm there. All right, peace. Click. Call my dude. I was like, hey, Ed, you remember what I told you? Yeah, it's about that time. Man. I'm sorry. I love you, man. But after this day, I'm out. Peace. You know what I'm saying? Sounds crazy, man.
But was it more, I take it, so you're saying it was more difficult for you because you weren't in that sort of style of...
It was difficult,
particularly,
man.
Particularly on the West Coast.
It was difficult. And I think it affected the whole of America, not just the West Coast, because that gangster rap created a different, almost a slightly different style of gangster and thug type of thing in New York. You know what I'm saying? And in the South as well. So it was like, it was the same kind of mind state, but different ways of going about it because of the regions of America. You know what I'm saying? Either way it go, it created this undertone gangster thing that, that all of the labels thought was the reason why, you know, this music was selling, in my opinion, you know. Did make it hard for us, but it definitely gave us character. It made us all more businesslike than the average person, you know what I'm saying? As well as more creative, in my opinion. You know, you got people like my homegirl, Ava DuVernay, who's making movies now, like out the yin yang and getting super love for her. She's like the most famous one of all of us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And she was the original Eve. If you know who Eve is, the rapper, she was the original Eve.
Right.
But she, and that girl can rap. She obviously don't have to though, boy.
Yeah.
Can rap. She's sick with it. Like really sick with it. But she was a film student the whole time we was going to The Good Life. So this is just a display of what we were saying. We was like, everybody gonna do their thing, but we loved rap and loved hip hop, so we definitely had to participate in some form of fashion. And I guess some of us were more about it than others and trying to chase the thing as a career. You know what I mean? And I think we were part of that part of it. You know what I'm saying? But I had this theory, me and Crafty was talking about this too, and I honestly think it's true. It's around that same time when the NWA thing was happening and the gangster rap thing hit, the UK changed. You guys was like, man, our police don't even carry guns. Y'all talking this gun shit, you know. And I think, honestly, that moment cracked the egg on the drum and bass, the jungle, the, all of the sounds that came after. When y'all got bored with hip-hop, like, hey, what are they doing that shit over there?
Yeah.
We gonna do our thing over here. And all that, all y'all dope-ass music just burst. In my opinion, I thought, we start coming over, and I'm just like, all right, word, this is some other shit. We're not getting this at home, you know what I mean? I just thought that, you know, from the few times we came, that hip-hop was the only thing. It was like, nah, you guys are doing your own thing out the gate.
When you started, like, with Jurassic 5 or whatever, I'm interested to know, because, like, your voice, obviously, a huge weapon. Like, the number of times I've been at, like, a gig or a party or something, and they play What's Golden, and they do a rewind on you saying it's the Verbal Herman Monster.
Right, that happens for real? Wow, I love to be a party to see that. That's crazy.
Well, it's the Verbal Herman Monster, the word enhancer, sick of phony mobsters controlling the dance floor. I'm in them dark places, catch you when you stark naked. Your heart races as we poke you for your chart spaces.
It's, like, amazing, man. So, like, how did that, because obviously you straight away, you know it's you. You've got that weapon, you know, like you're identifiable straight off the bat, right? And we were talking to some other officers, said, if you've got a higher pitched voice or you rap with a higher pitch, it's easier for you to hit loads of syllables and sort of, did your voice affect the way you've written? I mean, I guess you don't know because you've only ever had that voice, has it sort of like influenced, have you thought about using your voice as an instrument, or are you not conscious of it at all?
Honestly, that's the only way that I think about it
now
more than ever. Okay, so massive dancehall fan, you know, Caribbean family influences from, you know, from time. So always listen to, you know, any kind of reggae, soca, all that kind of stuff. And I always was, because of that, like a fan of like the Fania All-Stars and the salsa musics and all that. And just listening to the percussive aspect of it all.
Yeah.
Right? That was my unconscious aspect. And I was always attracted to anything that sounded like a bass, which is crazy. The bass itself, to like deep voice singers, to deep voice rappers, whatever it was, I always was attracted to that. Like Rakim, if it wasn't for him, you probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to me. That's the truth. Right, big up to that brother, no question. Him and like Melly Mel, and you know what I'm saying? Like the dudes. So that being said, it wasn't until I started dabbling around with Ozo Motley and then actually becoming a member of the band and then taking a trip with them in 98 to Cuba. We went to Havana to the International Youth Conference. And when we got down there, you know, one, I didn't want to go. I couldn't speak Spanish. I was like, man, I don't even know why I'm going down here, man. I mean, we might get killed down here. I don't know what the hell. I was like scared, you know what I'm saying? Never traveled like that before. Got down there. And honestly, it changed the way I thought about everything. the one instance that changed me really was the guitar player, Raul Pacheco. He found, like, he was so excited to be in Cuba that day, right? I was tired, man. It was like 4 a.m. I'm like, I'm going to lay down. He's like, I'm going to go rolling around. Check it out. You can speak Spanish. Go for it. I'm going to sleep. So I laid down. I'm asleep. It's 4. It's 6. I'm getting tapped. I'm like, dude, what, man? What's up, man? Let me just sleep a little longer. He's like, no, you got to come with me, man. I was like, all right, we in Cuba. All right. Got up, put on my clothes, walked with him. As soon as we stepped out where we were staying, it was cool where we were staying. We were staying in these, what they called them, FOFs, Friends of Fidel, where these people had these nice houses,
right,
and would host people that come to Cuba, which was dope, I guess. But anyway, we go outside of these apartment houses, kind of like these nice plush places. And there's this open field, and in the distance, there's a baseball field. These dudes were out there playing baseball, and the sun was coming up. I was like, that looked dope. That's fresh. We in Cuba. This is crazy. Is this what you wanted me to see? Because I'm going back to sleep.
Yeah.
He's like, no, follow me, man. So we start walking towards this church, and from a distance, this church looked abandoned.
Yeah, I know that thing of when somebody wakes you up to go and see something, because you're like, this is it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is this it? And you're walking on going, I hope, like, this, man, is the thing
I
that
hope
they want me to see.
This is it, exactly.
Is this the thing? It's amazing, man. It's amazing. No, it's not the thing. No, that's the thing, right? It's wicked. Exactly. No, I know that feeling.
That's exactly how I felt, man. So I'm like, so we get to the church, and it's abandoned, but you hear this music. They hell of a salsa band playing. I'm thinking it's a radio, because they play tight, like Frog Coochie, like tight. Like,
yeah.
I'm just like, damn, you know, where's this coming from? Ain't nobody in here. This place is dilapidated. And then you look, and there's a door that leads downstairs, and there's a light on. He's like, come on. I'm not going down there. You went down there. It was like, oh, went down already. When we went down there, there was a band playing. And this band, they were locals, and they were practicing to perform at the International Youth Conference. We went back and got the other band, met each other, everybody was chilling. Long story short, I'm just out. I'm the rap dude, so I'm just watching everybody doing their thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, so it's a guy, he comes over to me, he's like, what do you do? I was like, I rap. He was like, let me hear you. Can you rap something on that? I was like, okay, so the beat playing, so I did a little freestyle. Then I spit a little something written, and the dude liked it. He was like, he said, you know, you need to learn an instrument. And I was like, what instrument is that? I was like, I'm not trained at all. He was like, he turned and he grabbed the clave.
Yeah.
And he gave me the clave. I was like, what am I gonna do with these two sticks, man? He's like, look, what I'm about to teach you will control everybody in this room. I said, okay, how? So he showed me the one rung code rhythms, the two, you know, the 2-3, the 3-2. And he's like, hey, I'm gonna show you. If I start with 2-3 and they play to this, if I switch it up, it'll fuck everybody up. I was like, whatever. Start doing it. And he looked at me, but everybody's playing. You know, he I guess he's like, 1-2, then everybody stopped playing. He's playing the 2-3 rhythm. He looked at me, he was like, watch this. And he switched it. Everybody stopped and was like, yo, like, looked at him like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's control right there. So afterwards, he started talking to me about how that rhythm is a basis of a lot of the four-on-the-floor type stuff that we listen to on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's what's up. He was like, and if you thought about the way your voice and the way your words land like a percussive instrument, then it'll unlock patterns and styles if that's what you're looking for. And I was
right.
So I started writing to the drum, but writing to the drum, like finding the open spaces and, you know, thinking about myself as a timba or a conga or, you know what I'm saying, as well as a cajon or something, anything that's got a heavy bass noise to it. And I started unlocking some crazy shit. Then I started thinking about, like, okay, well, what's my favorite patterns? You know, you got dance hall patterns, man, like Buju Banton, dude. Listening to how Buju used to do his thing with the graveliest voice on earth. I was like, you don't take care of your voice at all, but he found a way to use it. That type of thing motivated me to say, okay, well, I'm gonna just do with what I have the best that I can.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad that story finished up with him telling you that's what you need to do with your voice. Because originally, the way you told that story was like, I started rapping, the guy heard me rap, and they said, you need to learn an instrument.
Right.
Like, if that shit sucked.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody, like, asked to see my stand up and then I did it, and goes, you need to learn to dance.
Right.
I was like, what the fuck, mate?
Like, man, thanks, man. You know what I'm saying? I guess you didn't enjoy yourself. That's real, though. I didn't even think about it like that. I was all enthralled. But yeah, man, you're right, though.
And so that really did, like, sort of help you with, like.
Yeah, it helped the way I thought about it. So once I got back, I started really, you know, because I like to work. So it ain't just like, I only have to do this Jurassic stuff or this Ozo stuff. Like, if I get an opportunity and it look like it's going to be able to challenge me to do something different, I'll try to do it. I mean, that's kind of where I'm here now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I do think it's amazing, like, you know, like, because so many rappers, like, just get a flow and then they do that over every single track. Then every so often when you hear a rapper, like, play with it, it's not, it feels less sort of... mathematical, you know, right. It feels like more like they're feeling it. Do you know what I mean? Like, right. It feels like it's got more musicality to it. Whereas you get some rappers that just, that's how I rap, and I'll adjust it to the tempo, but that is it, that's my flow. But others, they play with it and they'll drop out, they'll go off beat and then back on and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And that's when you feel like you sort of think, shit, I wouldn't even think to do that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's pretty amazing, man.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
So what sort of stuff do you listen to? Are you into hip-hop now? Do you listen to everything? Or
I try to, you know, on some, like, stock exchange type shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? I try to listen to everything. I try to, you know, but it hurts sometimes, man. Like, I can't, and maybe it's, and I never thought I would be able to, would have the opportunity to say this, but maybe it's the generation gap or something. I don't know. Like, I got a 25-year-old son. I'm 5 minutes from 50. It's like, when I listen to, like, a Lil Yachty or, I just can't, I don't, I'm like, I'm baffled.
Yeah.
You know, like, I like props to a brother like Chance the Rapper, or like J. Cole or Kendrick, or, you know what I'm saying? Who still, they still got the fundamental of it. They holding on to it and they pushing the envelope, like you said, like stretching and doing things with it that, you know, you wouldn't expect people. I love that. But like these other dudes, you know, who, for instance, the overall mentality is, hey, Biggie Smalls wasn't big when I was out. I was little. I don't know nothing about that. I don't have to know nothing about that.
Yeah.
Like, wait. Like, if you into something, wouldn't you want to know the history or at least a little bit of it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I understand the argument. It don't matter because what y'all doing is selling right now. But y'all bubblegum. And when I say bubblegum, not like, you cheap, you whack, this and the third, but more like you take the wrapper off and you chew it and the instant flavor is gone and you're going to the next thing.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? So it's a mad one, isn't it? Because, like, sort of constantly people are saying hip hop's over in this country. We're obsessed in the UK with saying hip hop's, like, you know, it's done. I know, man, it's not like that used to be. Fuck that, man.
Yeah.
But like, and then the thing is, it's like you said, with people like Kendrick and J. Cole and people like that, that feels like how I hoped hip hop would progress, you know. So you've got certain people like Chance the Rapper and, like, you go, this is what I expected. But what I didn't expect was the art of rapping to be sort of so throwaway. Do you know what I mean? Like, with Lil Yachty and people like that, like, you sort of, I remember listening to hip hop going, I wonder, because hip hop's so changeable, I remember, like, thinking, I wonder where it's going to go. And what I didn't realise is, like, some people just weren't going to give a crap about the art, like, about the ability to rap. Do you know what I mean? Like, I never thought, because, you know, I remember, like, we used to go to Jump Off here, like, where they do battles and stuff like that.
Okay.
And if anybody was, like, under par, they would get, the crowd would I mean, you have to leave immediately, do you know what I mean? Like, and under, like, a coat or something like that, do you know what I mean? And these guys just openly have got, just, they got no skills. They'll go onto a radio show, they won't be able to do it. And then they go, and then just go, don't, you know, it's all right.
Yeah, I don't, what I do, I don't do that. I'm a rock star.
Yeah. It's so weird.
Yeah, it is crazy. But I mean, you know, there are a couple of new ingredients in the mix, you know what I'm saying? Like, we grew up, I don't know exactly how old you are, but like I said, I'm you know, mid-40s and shit, and it's like, we grew up where there was no computers and internet, and, you know what I'm saying? Like, I asked these youngsters out the game, like, hey, you know what an encyclopedia is? No, not Wikipedia. Encyclopedia. You know? Yeah. No, see, that's what I thought. That type of thing to me is like the instant. Everything is instant. Like Google is God, so to speak. You know,
yeah,
I
mean, yeah.
I'm gonna ask him a question and he's gonna answer, and that's law.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, like having to actually go dig.
But the other thing is, it's like you can access so much more music at any one time.
Yeah,
right?
So
I remember, like, when I was growing up, I had enough money to probably buy like a tape, a cassette, like every month or something.
Meant
like
a lot
that
more,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I would put that on and I would listen to that exclusively for a month, right, until I could afford the next one,
right.
And I would know that record backwards. I'd know every bit, like everything, right?
Right.
But now it just doesn't. You can't. Nobody's listening to music like that now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like immediately you're on Spotify and you can like bring up 100 tunes. You know, you're not gonna. There's just no way that you're gonna spend that time with people. Listen to it differently. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And then what happens is because people consume it like that, people make it differently because you can't. Like, do you know when, like, you bought a cassette, right, and you listened to it, and the track that you hated or thought wasn't all that when you first listened to it ended up being your favourite by the time
later,
you fit?
I used to love that.
That slow burner, like that, you know, the grower, or you just like, holy shit, like, I can't believe I didn't like this shit. Like, do you know what I mean? And then the one that was the lead single, you go, I'm sick of that song. But it's that one that you thought, oh, this is a crap. And then you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine that happening because you just don't have that. Those tunes don't have a chance
now. It's over. Yeah, it seemed like, for real. It's like nobody's making music that'll last.
Yeah. It's just disposable, right?
I don't see 10 years down the line with, you know, how, like, say, dudes is like, man, dude, when I was 15, man, Jurassic 5 was my shit. But it's like now, you. Dude, when I was 15, man, my man, that little Uzi Vert, man, I don't know. Like, I can't. But maybe I'm disconnected to it from it because of age. I don't know.
I don't know.
I think people still make, like, records to be nominated things. Like, Beyonce's Lemonade, for example, is, like, so obviously made to win Grammys and stuff like that. So I get that. But, like, essentially, I agree.
I'm getting nervous because I've got kids, and like if they start listening to shit, I don't know what I'm gonna do, man. Like, what if my oldest son's a little yachty fan? What then? What am I gonna do?
I feel you.
What
man.
Am I gonna do, man?
I'm just glad Introduce my son's 25, man. Because what was crazy for me was like, here's a weird story. Okay, so Joe Budden's "Pump Me Up,"
you know that song.
My son's walking around with his headphones. He's like rocking to that shit, right?
Pump it up, you came to get it drunk with a dame. My shit is drunk, you came to get it on. More than 5 O's in your bank, then get it on. Roll up like that stank and get it on.
And I'm like, that's dope. That's dope. You like that song? Took his headphones, like, Pops, you heard this song? I was like, yeah, man. He's like, man, this song is hard. I was like, really? I was like, it's dope.
Yeah.
But it's some people that done that beat better. Ain't nobody used this beat before. I was like, hold on. So I went and got the Scenario remix and I played it to him. And he lost his shit. He was like, Busta Rhymes is rapping on this beat? Like, he lost his shit.
What we gonna do in 92, even though we had fun in 91. Put the flip my laser beam coming down. Run up, no sound. Leaving cracks in the ground. What's going on, my man? God damn, I know my brain is hurting. Listen up, Busta, rhythm will hit him, then I get him. Flip on him, shit on him, hit on him, then I will sit on him.
So I was like, okay, I got something for you. I went downstairs. I collect DVDs.
Yeah.
I got 10 DVDs, and that's what's so dope. Like, you could do that.
Yeah.
Starting from, like, Style Wars all the way up to, like, the most recent documentary about hip-hop. Man.
Yeah.
Brought them to the house. So, look, this is homework. I ain't saying do this today. I'm saying I'll give you 2 weeks, man. Watch all this shit. And while you're watching them, take some notes. Come holler at me. Your pops has been around. I've seen this shit.
Yeah.
Holler at me. He's like, all right, cool.
Well, see, did he take that on? Because children tend to disregard what their dad's like, you know, even though you've got the credentials.
right.
Whatever, dad. You know what I mean?
Like, I can tell you some instances on that note. Either.
Yeah.
But this particular time, he took my, because he was tripping on the Busta Rhymes thing. He was
right.
Like, wow, what else? His whole thing was, what else am I missing? So it was dope. He watched all them joints in about a little less than a month.
Yeah.
But he had notes, and I was proud. I was like, yes. And we sat and talked for like hours about, okay, so Pops, what happened when, you know, why is Sheila E. in Crush Groove? Like,
yeah.
Questions, like, I'm like, real ones. I'm like, that's a dope question.
Yeah.
Really, I really don't know.
Yeah.
Sheila, you know, other than, you know, the Hollywood factor of it all. But it was just dope to be able to, for him to ask it, who's Cap? You know, like, just ill questions.
Yeah.
So Grand Wizard, Theodore is his name? Like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And now I had, and it was cool because after that, I had this 16-year-old, 17-year-old who would go around his homies and have all his knowledge. And they'd be like, I ain't never heard of that. It's like, yeah, I know. It's, you know, my dad was telling me about it. Then they go, oh, shit. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, it was a time when my son didn't think I was cool just because all his homies thought I was cool.
Anybody,
you know, some we'd be walking around, like I take him to the zoo or some shit, and somebody stop me. Oh, Charlie Turner, man, what's up, man? I love your group. And he's like, Dad, come on, man. Like, I thought we were hanging out. Like, he was resentful. One time he came home with a blank piece of paper. I didn't know it was blank. And he was like, Dad, can you sign this? This is from school. I was like, the fuck you didn't did? You didn't,
yeah.
I got a, what is that, trip slip? Or you in trouble or something? I look at the paper and it's blank. I'm like, is this a joke? Because when I was little, I had my mom sign a piece of paper and I learned her signature. And
yeah,
I got a little bunch
that.
Of shit.
Yeah, right? Practice that, yeah.
So I was like, what is this, a joke, man? You know what I'm saying? He was like, no. Nah. But he was salty. He was really mad about this. He was like, my PE teacher, man, is a fan, man. He wanted you to sign. He was mad. Like, he was really angry, man. I was like, okay. And I signed it for him, but I didn't know how to feel about that. I was like, dang, well, maybe it's just because I am who I am. He's rebellious about it.
You can't be cool.
Yeah, but then later, it, you know, as he got older,
yeah.
It's all good. So.
My oldest son.
How old is your oldest?
7.
Yeah.
He has got no filter. So he'll say things like, there's a kid in class that said you weren't that funny the other night on this thing. And I said to him, from now on, you never tell me that again. Daddy's too insecure.
It's like having a just permanent Twitter there.
Yeah.
Some 7-year-old didn't like me.
Yeah. No, but my kid, they just, the thing is like, your kids don't think it's cool. My son doesn't think it's cool. He just says, oh, like he'll have a mate round. And then his mate go, oh, like I saw you under it. And then Theo's like, yeah, okay, he's just my dad.
Right.
Right.
Do you think
I mean?
He might do when he's older, when he's like 50, do you think, or he'll just find it more and more embarrassing as you get older?
I want to be embarrassing.
Do you? Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I know
some
people.
The worst type of embarrassing dad.
Yeah, that's what I want to be. I don't want to be a cool dad. I want to be like,
you will be telling dad jokes.
Yeah, yeah. When he brings a girl home, I want to like come downstairs in cycle shorts, do you know what I mean? And then like, do you know what I mean?
It's just purely to entertain yourself.
Who is this? Hey, how you doing?
Oh, Theo's got a friend. Hey, how you doing?
Cartwin dancing.
So when you're 25, you can educate him about comedians from when you were
I mean, like,
you'd be giving him all the DVDs.
I would find it upsetting. Yeah. Like, I would find it upsetting if he was listening to crap music or listening to like or enjoying shit comedy.
Yeah,
that would piss me off.
Yeah.
And by shit comedy, I mean 90% of it.
There you go.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
You hear me? Yeah?
This is going to put this in a time capsule to listen to in 15 years.
Is there anything that you don't like about hip hop or anything that's. Do you have a bugbear about it at all? Anything, any element at all?
Nah, man, to be perfectly honest, because it's allowed me to find myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the name of your show, man. It saved my life, for real.
Yeah.
Like, I'm from where they call Chirac now.
Yeah.
And had I stayed, had I participated in anything other than hip-hop, man, I probably wouldn't be here. I'd be dead. I'd be smoked out. I'd be in a jail somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of my friends, honestly, 82% of them, give you the odd number, are one of the three. You know, dead, locked up, or really, really, really strung out on drugs. And it's just like, I say my city's back lots are infected with crack, rocks, and hookers, but that's not the method I chose to get accepted. And that's the part that I'm proud of to this day. You know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't change a thing about it, man.
Yeah. Did you watch the Evolution of Hip Hop?
I kind of liked it. I mean, you know, in situations like that, it's got to be longer than 4 or 5 episodes.
I know.
But I mean, I liked what he did. I thought it was really cool because it summed it up in a way for newer dudes to like look at him and still be interested. You know what I'm saying? We like, if you're a nerd about hip hop, then you're ready for every little mathematical, technical, his father was this and this. But if, you know,
it's
what I'm
like Star Wars, like, do you
exactly.
know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
That mythology of it all, do you know what I mean? Like, I was the kid that really liked to sort of be that nerd and sort of pull people up on stuff. Do you know what I mean? Actually, that beat was originally used 6 years ago. Yeah. And, you know, okay, you can say that Snoop Dogg is original, but he is heavily influenced by Slick Rick. So I think you'll find. So I think you need to check back. Do you know what I mean? All that kind of shit. I used to love being that kid. Do you know what I mean? Just like...
Hey, I'm the opposite. Like, I did a bunch of... Not the opposite, but I did a bunch of... hanging out, and he's one of my good brothers, man. And I did a couple songs with him, with Brother Jay from X-Clan. And I'm in his grip. Hey, you know, man, without you, it wouldn't be no Snoop Dogg, right? You and Slick Rick, man, y'all, that's it. It's like y'all had a little baby, and there it is right there. I even told Snoop that. He was like, yeah, you're right.
Did you see that video of him complaining about new rappers? Have you seen
funny. Yeah, Snoop, big up for that, man. I love that. I was loving that.
I love it when people just like, they've obviously just caught him when he's feeling particularly honest. Do you know what I mean? Just diplomacy's gone out
the
window.
What's dope about Snoop, though, man. A lot of people don't know. Like, I'd pay $100, honestly.
Yeah.
I would pay $100 to just watch him talk and tell jokes, because the dude is funny as hell.
Yeah.
Like jaws hurting after you finish kicking it with him type thing. But he's always been like super, I think that's what's funny about him. Mad honest, and like too much so sometimes, you know, where you just like, damn, Snoop. You know what I'm saying? But he's dope. So I think somebody like him, man, definitely could teach some people a couple of things.
He was like, he was like a marketing dream, wasn't he? Because like,
wow.
Because like, man. Not only did he like make an incredible album, like his first album just out the gate, like everyone over here was listening to that album.
Yeah.
But also the look, his voice, the persona, like everything about it, you can put that on everything. Do you know what I mean? Like it was crazy.
Your grandma know who Snoop Dogg is.
Yeah, exactly, but that's it.
That shit. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And like, you know, people know who Snoop Dogg is, never listened to a record of his. Do you know what I mean? Like, but they'll watch a show or whatever, or they think he's funny. It's mad,
exactly, because
he's
funny, mate.
What else do you listen to apart from hip hop then? Do you listen to everything?
I try to listen to everything. I was talking about this earlier today. I don't really listen to country music as much. I respect it, though, because of the way that they write, man. I love the way that they're able to capture, like, serious emotion. You know what I'm saying? Even if it's, like, some racist shit. You know, but I'm saying just, like...
You can feel the passion about racism.
You can feel that passion. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I start to feel racist listening to it. And yeah, no, I get it.
We should do a spin-off.
You put me where you are. Do you know what I mean? Like,
do a spin-off podcast.
Yeah. Country saved my life. Jeopardize my life.
Oh, man. I start to feel racist. I feel you, man. Like, it's funny, too, because my dad, man, my pops, it's funny, man. My pops, Chicago dude to the max, man. He lived in Texas for a while. And man, dude, this dude is a ZZ Top fan.
It really?
It bugs me out. I'm like, dude, you like... He like, man, you can't tell me them dudes, them long-ass beards ain't cool. See how cool they are? They cool. He just loved them. I don't know what that was.
My dad, he ran a pub, and... He kept telling me, he said he's a massive Bob Marley fan, right? Nice. He's a drinker, so he's a massive Bob Marley fan. So one night, he got them to put on Jamming, and he said, Ramesh, I'm going to sing to this. Just everybody clear the floor, right? So he gets ready. All he knew was, we're jamming. That's literally, he just, for
just
3 minutes,
over
just watching, yeah, just watching this over this fat Sri Lanka guy just go, we're jamming. We're jamming. I'm just like, Dad, look, you don't have to do this. No, we're jamming. Shut up. I want to do this. I was like, you're not a Bob Marley fan. What's that of you, man? So, you're doing a tour. What plans have you got for the future?
Hey, man, God willing, man, just to be able to take a breath, man, for real. You know, I'm honestly grateful to be where I am. You know what I'm saying? A lot of my homies didn't make it past 17, 18, and I'm always reflecting on that on a day-to-day basis. In 2000, our tour bus crashed. I got this big old scar on my head, metal plate right here from, like, 2 inches this way, and we wouldn't be talking. So it's like, it's a lot of carpe diem going on for me. You know what I'm saying? And so... That's what I'm on, man. I'm still able to make music. At this point in my life, I don't want to have to chase music, and I don't want to have to be like in the mind state, I got to make some music that's going to make it. I just want to have some fun.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it, man. And that's what I've been doing, man, since this accident. I just been like, all right, if I can still do this, because when I was in the hospital bed, I was like, okay, my homeboy is the general manager at Timberland. I hope he can... I might need a job, man.
Were you really thinking on that?
Oh, you don't even understand, man. Because I knew how severe it was after I... You got enough time, real quick? Watch this story, man.
Yeah,
so
good.
We, 2000, were on the Warped Tour in America. This is a predominantly punk rock tour. That's what was dope about Jurassic we had. We were able to be everywhere, right? We were on that tour. It was like summer camp to the max. And we were in places where, in certain cities... the punk rock scene was so great that the neo-Nazi scene came through and hate, you know, so we had rocks thrown at us, we fights, it was all kind of shit. But when it was good, it was good. When it was bad, it was bad. But when it was bad, you would see groups that you wouldn't think would stand up and stand with you, stand up. So I thought that was really dope.
Yeah.
And camaraderie with a lot of, like, a couple of rock bands and a few punk rock bands to this day that I die for right now because how serious they was. Anyway, that being said, we were on the tour in Nashville and we had to drive to Houston the next day. Our tour bus, the two generators in the tour bus broke. So our tour bus driver was from Nashville and he knew where to get it fixed. And it was his duty to get it fixed while he slept. You know what I'm saying? We had the show. The show was in the daytime because it was a daytime festival. Yeah. So we had the show. And then we had all this time to kill before it was time for us to leave at about 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
By the time 2 in the morning came, the bus was done. It was fixed. The driver himself, instead of sleeping, brought his family to the show, hung out, did all kind of shit. I don't know what else he did, but I know I saw him at the show when he should have been in the bed, introducing me to his wife and his children and shit. So it was kind of like awkward, right? 15 minutes outside of the drive, I go to sleep. And I wake up. When I wake up, I'm looking at hospital lights. And I'm like, okay, this is not the bus. What happened? I'm in my bed. And I'm like, I look around. I'm hearing beep, beep. And I'm looking. I see the little beep machines, the heart machines. And I look at my arm. I see wires. And I'm like starting to panic a little bit. So I look over, I see a mirror, and I know that I had just cut my hair the night before.
Yeah.
So I reach up to do this, and when I touched my head, it was like out here, and it had like stitches and stuff in my head. I'm like, yo, and it hurt when I touched it. I was like, yo. So I tried to lean up to look in the mirror, and my head is like, just started really throbbing, so I had to lay back down. And the beep machines are beep, 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 they're going off fast now, and I'm like panicking. Press the nurse button. I'm like, yo. She's like, can I help you, babe? I'm like, what the hell happened? I'm panicking. Four nurses come in. Baby, just calm down, calm down. The lead nurse, she's like, calm down. Give me a second. We got to go handle this thing down the hall. I come back and I talk to you about it. And I tell you what happened. You don't remember? I was like, nope, I don't. What happened? All right? They left. I'm sitting there like, what the fuck? Look up in the corner, there's a TV. This is right when my homeboy Sway got his job.
Right.
At MTV.
Yeah.
When he used to rock them big ass hats. Because his locks were stupid long at the time.
Yeah.
But he used to rock the big ass hats, keep them covered and shit. Rap group Jurassic 5 was in a tour bus accident. And I'm just like,
oh my God, God.
And they show the bus. It has a big blue tarp on it. It was in a 6-foot ditch. And the tree line had picked it up. And another tree line that was going this way stopped us right before we went on another 12-foot drop. This guy swerves and falls asleep and crashes the bus. I'm sleeping in the back. I didn't sleep in the bunks. So I got thrown from my couch and my head smashed against the table. And then when the tree line picked us up, threw me right back into my bed, covers over me as if I slept through the whole thing.
Wow.
Fellas had to break down the door to get in, and they saw me in the bed. And he was like, damn, you slept through that shit, Dad? And they moved me, and they saw all this blood and brains and shit, and they panicked. And then supposedly the helicopter, this is how your mind works.
Yeah.
Still to this day, I don't remember. It's a big chunk of memory gone, but I'm grateful. But I've tried to remember. I've sat in the dark, like, trying. Just won't come back. No, mine's like, nope, I'm not telling you this because you don't need to know. You know what I'm saying? Which is cool, but they said the helicopter came and got me. It was a blessing. I was 15 minutes outside of Nashville because it's supposedly in America, per capita, the best brain surgeons in America come out of this college called Vanderbilt in Nashville. So they took me to Vanderbilt Hospital. Dr. Luke, big up to that brother. He sewed my head up. He got in there, cut the hole out. It was fragments in my brain, and you know that he had to one by one pick out, then cut a perfect hole and restructure, and then get the plate and. It looks like a little bionic spider up there, right? When he showed me the X-ray, and I was just like tripping, like, damn, shit is crazy. My mom makes me go see him every time I go to Nashville. Go
check
say
it out,
hi
oh, right,
to Dr. Luke and tell him I said thank you.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? But yeah, so
Well, how does that affect airport security? Do you set the thing off?
No. That's why. That's I don't know if you heard that song I got called Coming Through with Newmar.
Oh, yeah.
To rip without rest and bless. My skull's laced with titanium plates that pass metal detection. Yes.
Yeah, I, you know, I got metal plates that pass metal detection. That's true.
Yeah, because, you know, currently, if you're brown with a beard, what you don't need is an extra restriction. Oh, do you know what I mean? Man. Like, you know what?
Trust me, I know.
No, it's a plate. Nah, mate.
Watch, see? Beep. See that? Beep. All right. Yeah, there you go.
Cool. Listen, it's been an absolute honour to have you on the show, man. Thank you so much.
No problem.
I hope the tour goes well. Crafty Cuts was supposed to be here, but he was on babysitting duties.
Yeah, man. Mr. Martin. Big up, dog. Big up his son and daughter, too, man. He got a son that's, like, older than his years. It's crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man.
Oh, cool. Well, we'll get him on next time. But thank you so much for coming on, man. We appreciate it. Cheers.
No problem, thanks, man. Sam. Thank you, man.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to. Courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.